You are listening to AVFC Extra, a no-nonsense look at the club we all love. Brought to you by the Claret and Blue podcast.
Hello and welcome to AVFC Extra. I'm James Rushton and today I'm joined by Tom Leach of Hampshire Live to talk about a transfer deal that hasn't actually happened yet. We're talking James Ward-Prowse. Just to shed a bit of light on the situation, it's something that's got Villa fans talking. Thought we could get to the bottom of it. I wanted to see if Saints would sell. Tom's got all the information and of course he can tell us a bit more about the player himself. So without any more talking or rambling on, here you go. Enjoy the conversation. So, Tom, how are you getting on?
Yeah, good. Thank you, mate. How are you?
Yeah, all good. Delighted to have you on, actually, because it's a bit of a weird topic. We usually do this kind of stuff after signings, but because this one's so weird and so hyped and so big, I thought it would be best to have you on to talk about the Ward-Prowse situation. First off, I know this is a spoiler for the rest of the podcast. The answer to this means people will probably turn off straight away, but is it possible that a deal could be struck between Villa? You know, we've all seen the speculation that, you know, he's a major Villa target. More than likely is, but just wanted your thoughts on whether a deal could be struck. You're the expert, so I'm really hoping you say yes as a Villa fan, to be honest. But what were your thoughts on that?
Well, the only thing that we're told on this end is that James Ward-Prowse is not for sale. That's been the same with Danny Ings. It's the same with Yannick Vestergaard this summer at Southampton. Those players are not for sale. Now, what I will say with any player, be this players at Barcelona, players at Real Madrid or players at Manchester United, if you offer a lot more than what the player's worth, you'll get them because that's how transfers in football work at every level. The problem that I think we'll face Villa this summer is that James Ward-Prowse is Southampton's most important player. He's on a long-term deal till 2025. He's just signed that deal less than 12 months ago. Hasnittle loves him. The fans love him. The owners love him. And it's one really good example of how important James Ward-Prowse is to Southampton is the FA Cup semi-final defeat against Leicester City earlier this season. After the game, Hasnittle and Ward-Prowse came out onto the field and they stood in the centre circle and they spoke to each other for maybe 20 minutes. They were debriefing the game. He is central to everything Southampton do. He's their most important player, even though he's only 26 years old. So the problem for Villa there is how much Southampton value Ward-Prowse is already well into the tens and tens of millions. So if Villa are going to get him from Southampton, they need to offer a silly amount of money. And it's probably money that they've not got. He's English. We're going to see over the next few months with transfers in the Premier League that there's so many work permit problems with signing players from abroad. English players, you don't have to worry about that. They fulfill the homegrown quota as well. So just the fact he's English, if he was an ordinary English midfielder, he'd be worth a lot of money. But he's an exceptional English midfielder. And he's a midfielder who, if you listen to most pundits, they can't believe he's not in the England squad this summer. So it's going to cost Villa, I'd imagine, a lot more than they've paid for Buendia, which I guess that then goes on to Villa's side as to whether they've got that kind of bid in their pocket.
If that silly money was to arrive, and I'm guessing it would be upwards of 40, touching 50 million, even if it could be well. It depends, and it's Southampton. The ball is in Southampton's court, as you say. Would a sale at any cost, at that high cost, would it be a good deal for Southampton? Would you trust the club to invest it wisely, or would it be best, like Villa's situation with Grealish, would it be best that they hold on to that player and build around them?
I think that's only a question really for the hierarchy at Southampton. But one thing I will say about Southampton is that we're always reassured that their owner, we don't really hear from him. It's no secret that he doesn't put an awful lot of money into the club, but he doesn't take any money away from the club. £50 million coming in for a player will be reinvested because the club are allowed to keep operating with what they get come in. So with any transfer, if it's accepted, then that will be the club deciding that the money that they're getting is worth it. I think if a huge 60-odd million pound bid comes in for Ward-Prowse, then I think even some Southampton fans will say, look, James Ward-Prowse is a really important player for us, but what could be done with that money will help the football club. But as I say, that's the same with any transfer, really, with any football club, whether that's Manchester United or Barcelona. But yeah, he's, as I said before, he is like I guess the stance from Southampton is the same as what most clubs would do with a player they don't want to sell. They're going to say he's invaluable to them. But big money, Southampton are not in a position to turn down silly money for a player, especially if it's well above their valuation of him.
Talk about the player himself. I think he's like a one club man, isn't he? He's always been around. I think there was a bit of about maybe Portsmouth, or is he a Portsmouth supporter or something? There's a bit of a controversy there. But I wanted to what his background is, or you know, you've been covering Southampton now for a while now. What's your experience of him been like?
Yeah, he's a Pompey lad, but I think in the same way that Jamie Carragher was an Everton fan, I mean that changes as soon as you get to a certain age in the academy. But yeah, he's Southampton's golden boy in a way. He's there. Southampton's got a lot of brilliant academy players. They've had Gareth Bale, Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, Theo Walcott, who's now back there. But James Ward-Prowse is the one of now. He's their golden boy at the moment. Like I say, he's their most important player. He's crucial to everything they do. I was having a conversation with someone about James Ward-Prowse the other day, and I said that I can't remember ever giving him less than a 7 out of 10 in my player ratings after every game. He's always a 7 out of 10. If not, he's an 8 and a 9. He was their player of the season by a mile. Stuart Armstrong and Carl Walker-Peters were good, but James Ward-Prowse was unbelievable all season long. He's played every single game for Southampton for over 2 years, which is unbelievable. When you think how much players have been complaining this season about this strange elongated season, not enough rest, he's played every single minute. He's also been away with England for 3 camps during that, and he's still played every single minute for Southampton. Yeah, he's a brilliant player. I've interviewed him a couple of times. Because of coronavirus, we've not been able to mix with the players as normal, but I've had a few phone calls with him to do interviews, and yeah, he's a very mature guy. He jokes me a couple of times that he feels like he's 34, 35 years old this season, because he's found himself as one of the senior players in the dressing room, with players like Nathan Teller, who are so young coming in. But yeah, he's as I say, he's Southampton's most important player. And he's at a point in his career now where he's 26, so he's about halfway. He'll be really happy with what he's done so far. And based off the information that he's signed that new deal through 2025, he sees the next 4 years at least being at Southampton.
Are there any particular like strengths and weaknesses to his playing style? No, he displayed a lot of strengths in his most recent appearance for England. So it is a shame, actually, not to see him in that camp, especially, you know, we will talk about the set-piece ability later as well. I'm sure we'll come on to it next for a bit as well. But, you know, it seems what a team, not just like England are missing, but a team like Villa as well, just that's most teams, actually, with the quality of his set-pieces, he could be an impact pretty much across the globe. But I just wanted to know any particular things that stand out positively and negatively about Ward-Prowse.
Yeah, I don't think we need to talk about the set pieces right now. I'm sure we'll get onto those later because everyone knows about them. I think it's unfair sometimes that he's called a set piece specialist or merchant at times when there's so much more to his game. He's unbreakable. He plays every minute of every game, and he runs harder than anybody on the pitch. If you listen to any Southampton player talk about the running stats, he tops them every week. I've not seen the running stats for this season yet, but I know that last season he was the player in the Premier League who covered the most distance. He's also clever. He knows when to fight and when not to. Southampton fans have seen him have endless tussles with Wilfried Zaha. They seem to clash every time they play against each other. He's clever with that. That's something that he's added since he's been working with Hasenhüttl. He knows when to get a clever yellow card and when to make a clever foul, and that wins points for Southampton. He covers yards. It's something we saw. It's something I realised most about him, to be honest, when I saw him playing for England, because in the role that he plays for Southampton, he kind of plays as a number six, and he covers a lot of ground. He covers more ground than anyone in the Premier League, but it's clear to see what his roles are. But when he played for England, he sort of played like a one of a three. So he was like a number eight. He was moving a lot more, and yeah, he's up and down. He's everywhere. He's a box to box. I think that's when he's at his very best. In terms of negatives, like I said earlier, his performance has never really dropped below a 7. So it's hard to find a negative. There has been games when he struggled without the right man next to him. But when Oriol Romeu is there, he normally scores an 8 or a 9 for me out of 10. So it's hard to identify a top negative. Maybe his defensive work, but like I say, I don't think that's really his game. I think he's an eight as opposed to a six. He just probably plays as that six for Southampton.
I mean, we've glossed on it there a bit, but in a midfield trio, so for example, Villas, where would he fit then? He would be that number eight, I guess, where we've kind of put John McGinn this season. He'd be the box-to-box guy.
Yeah, I think very similar. He'd probably be one of the wide of those three. He benefits from having, you know, an Aura or a Mayu next to him, like he does at the moment, doing all the defensive work and making things a little bit nasty in the middle, and then him thriving off that and playing alongside it. So, yeah, I think that's why he looks so good for England in those games, really, because he was partnered by a few in midfield. The games he played for England were those games when Southgate was trying that 4-3-3, so he was one of the three. But he's versatile. He can play at right back. He's done that a lot for Southampton. He can play right midfield. He's done that a lot for Southampton. He did that on the final day of the season away at West Ham. So, yeah, he's versatile. He can play a lot of positions. And I think anywhere in that midfield cluster, he can play. We say that he's a number eight. That's taken away probably how good he is as a six, because he's been Southampton's best player this season playing as a six. So, yeah, defensive midfield, he can do that. I probably sound like I'm bigging him up an awful lot to then say, sorry, Villa fans, you're not going to get him this summer. But yeah, he's a good player in every position. He really gets put in, and there really aren't any weaknesses as such.
From what you're describing, and I know this is a bit off topic, but it sounds like it's almost like Leo Bakuna is a pound shop James Ward-Prowse, that utility man with a bit of aggression.
He really is. He can play in every position, and okay, we've never seen him in goal and we've never seen him up front, but he does pretty much everything else for Southampton. So that's one of the reasons why I think his valuation that the club will put on him will just be so high, and it'll be one that if Villa match it, they'll be probably breaking transfer records, and fair play if they're willing to do that. Maybe Southampton will budge, but I just can't see a bid of that size really coming in for him this summer. I don't know. Maybe Villa prove me wrong. I guess we'll have to wait and see.
So go on then. You got to tell me about the set pieces. And look, Villa fans know all about them because they've stunned us more than once, actually. You know, twice in a game. And it was, I think what stands out really good about his set piece ability is the fact that in that Villa-Southampton match, the one at Villa Park, the XG, the expected goals, was weighted towards Villa. So people after the match were like, yeah, look, we were all right. It's like, no, you're not all right, because if you're giving those chances away to James Ward-Prowse of all people, it doesn't matter how many good chances you've made. He'll score, you know, he'll thread the needle. A lot of the narrative about his absence from the England squad, which, you know, arguably does deserve a place in there, is about that set-piece ability. And, yeah, I think I get what you mean about the set-piece merchant things. You hear that free-kick merchant a lot, you know, directed at some players. It's a hard thing to take, and I mean, at Villa, we've seen that corner's a hard thing to take these days. So having someone who can actually put, you know, thread the needle with those set pieces is a massively valuable thing. So gotta talk to me about these free kicks. You've seen a few in person, surely, as well.
You instantly think of those ones around the edge of the area that he puts in the top corner, the two against Villa, the one against Man United this season. I think there was three more, too many to think of, really. But I think the most impressive ones are the ones from areas where most players would just punt it into the area, but he puts them in the perfect place every time. Those crossing free kicks, his corners are just as good; they're exceptional. One big bonus with the start of Southampton's season was what they had Yannick Vestergaard, who's a 6'6" Danish centre back. For those who don't know who he is, he wins every header that comes his way. So having Ward-Prowse over those and whipping them in, it was perfect. I do think he's probably the best free kick taker in the world. I don't know whether we're going to see Hakan Çalhanoğlu tonight for Turkey. He's meant to be really good in the Euros, but James Ward-Prowse is if not the best free kick taker in the world. The thing about being a set piece merchant, I think with England you can't have a player who's just free kicks, because there's no point having a player who can take free kicks if he's not on the pitch. And the question is, was Ward-Prowse going to be on the pitch? But I think that was missing the point a little bit. I think Ward-Prowse could have been on the pitch because he's so good at everything else that he does with his game. But also, those big free kick moments that James Ward-Prowse so often buries, quite often they're deep in the game. They can be, for England, they probably have been in extra time. So bringing on a player like James Ward-Prowse for England in extra time, a player who's ran more than anybody in the Premier League for the last 2 years, a player you could argue is the fittest player in the Premier League and the best free kick taker, perhaps, in the world, to have that on your pitch in extra time of an England knockout game, that would have been huge, especially with Jack Grealish winning free kicks off tired legs. And I'm sure there's a little bit in, if Villa are as interested as the reports say, then I'm sure that that's in Dean Smith's mind, Jack Grealish winning free kicks and James Ward-Prowse getting over them. You know, people like Tyrone Mings getting on the end of them with his head if he's not already going for goal from the free kicks. So, yeah, honestly, he's brilliant. I think he could well be the best free kick taker in the world. And yeah, I think he's that talent, especially deep in extra time with so many tired legs on the pitch, has been overlooked a little bit by England this summer.
Yeah, there'll always be one person in the comments who's just went on a highlight reel of some Mexican wonder kid, you know, burying yeah, them out on the 17 level, going, look, I'm just seeing this lad, actually, you're wrong. And it's like, no Villa fan, after what they've seen James Ward-Prowse do to us this season, should be actually disagreeing with you, because look, we had Conor Hourihan and he was no slouch at free kicks. Absolutely magic, time and time again. But, you know, players like James Ward-Prowse, just on a different level. The situations they're doing them in is, you know, my heart beats hard enough thinking of recording a podcast and putting my face out there, letting alone standing over a free kick 89 minutes to go, knowing you've got to hit it and knowing you can do it as well. That's the hardest part, knowing you've got to just do this kind of simple task over and over again and nail it each time. And that's probably the most amazing thing about it, that there's this, it's just a simple thing, isn't it? A free kick, hitting that dead ball over, getting the goal, top corner. It seems like such a simple and easy thing, but doing it, we've seen in the Premier League, it's hard to do. Not many players are banging in free kicks like him. So, you know, that set piece ability, yeah, we can sit and talk set piece merchant, but he's making a name for himself off the back of him. So, you know, fair play to him, Tom.
One of the big things that we just add that amazed me about him this year in terms of those free kicks is after that Villa game, I think it was the Villa game, we spoke to Raul Pasnettle about him. And I think I said something along the lines of, does he just practice them every day? Does he sometimes just walk off from training and have a pop at a few free kicks? And Ralph said that he's never actually seen him practice a free kick. Now, when we speak to Ward-Prowse about that, he says, I practice them, but not as much as I used to. He tells stories about being in his mum and dad's garden and that was all he did religiously, just practicing free kicks over and over again. He's a massive David Beckham fan. He loves David Beckham. So it's no shock that's where it comes from. You can see a lot of Beckham in the way he hits the free kicks as well. He kind of does the same run up and he arches his body the same way. But apparently, according to his manager, he doesn't practice free kicks as much as you'd think. So it's just some bizarre raw talent that he's got, or it's something that he practiced so much as a 10-year-old, he doesn't need to do it anymore.
To be fair, I know a bit about that, man. So that's all I used to do for football. I could just, couldn't play. I could just hit a free kick. When you're a kid, all you see is the free kick. You don't look really focusing on the 90 minutes. You just see the free kick, and that's the glory. I can bend when you curl on it, feels good, but it's like, you know, if you can't do anything else, what's the point of you?
He's of that age as well. He's 26 years old, so he'd have been about seven then, or maybe six, when David Beckham scored that free kick against Greece. That probably Beckham's most famous free kick. So, yeah, he's exactly of that age when he probably watched that and ran straight out in the garden and then watched the Man United ones on YouTube and kept practicing them. So, yeah, he's exactly of that age when he absolutely loved David Beckham.
Yeah, I think me and James Ward-Prowse are kindred spirits there, mate. But I think from the manner of the conversation, there's possibly no movement now. Look, I don't know if it will happen myself, but realistically, do you expect him to remain at Southampton come deadline day?
Yeah, I do. I expect him to be with Southampton for, to be honest, a long time. Everything I said earlier about for how the valuation of him is so high, Southampton's most important player. One thing we're told too, even the big losses that Premier League clubs have confirmed this season because of coronavirus and no matchday revenue, we're told Southampton just don't need to sell. They will sell. They'll sell players like Jan Valery and Jake Vokins. Jan Valery was with Birmingham City on loan this season. They'll sell players like that to lower league clubs, I think, just to raise a little bit of funds here and there. Angus Gunn as well. That's a story that I broke yesterday. Angus Gunn is on his way to Norwich, we think. There's a £5.5 million move being discussed there between those two. So players will be sold, but they don't need to sell their best players to balance the books, to keep themselves afloat. They just don't need to. So it's going to take a huge bid for them to sway on that decision. If there's any player that they're going to lose, it's not going to be him. He's their most important player, most valuable player, partly because of that long deal he's got. And that's what the deal was there to do. It was there to keep them together for a very, very long time.
Well, I think if any Villa fans watching who want us to have that maverick set piece taker, that box-to-box midfielder, the guy who we can moan about not appearing for England now that Watkins, Mings and Grealish have got their caps, it's got to be him. They got to show the checkbook, I guess, from what you're saying. They got to show it in some style, but they've spent big on Wendy. If they do gazump that deal with this one, I think we'd all be happy. You wouldn't be, but I don't think we're here to make you happy, mate. But Tom, thank you. Thank you so much for coming on. I know it's a bit of a difficult conversation having to come on and kind of talk about the, you know, a deal that might not exist yet, a deal that is probably uncomfortable for someone covering Southampton to talk about. So, yeah, you know, can't thank you enough for coming on, mate. Where can Villa fans find you if they want to bug you?
Trying to keep on top of it if anything does emerge. My Twitter's at Tom Leach, L-E-A-C-H, H-L at the end, actually. If you want to follow me and keep up to date with James or Cross, that's probably the place to do it. Anything I hear will be on there. So, yeah, thank you for having me on.
Thank you for listening to AVFC Extra, an additional dose of Aston Villa content for you, brought to you by the Claret and Blue podcast team. If you enjoyed the episode, please do get in touch with us, get involved in the comment sections, tweet us at Claret Blue Pod, or leave us a review on iTunes. We really do appreciate it. We'll catch you again very soon with some more content. Until then, up the Villa.